In these daily broadcasts, we're conducting an examination of some of the great fundamental questions about life. We're doing this in the light of that book, which we believe to be an inspired revelation from God, the Bible. That reminds me that my five-year-old was perturbed one day because her copy of the Bible did not say Holy Bible. She felt she had in some way been shortchanged at the bookstore, so I assured her that all Bibles are holy, since they record the inspired words of prophets and sages, and of course of Jesus himself, whom we believe to be the promised Christ, the King of Israel, and the future ruler of the world. We have been discussing in some detail the condition of man when he dies. We started by establishing from the book of Genesis the fact that man is a mortal creature, even sharing with the animals the same breath of life, that breath of life which at this very moment sustains you and me and keeps us alive. We noted in Genesis 7 that when the flood struck the earth, all flesh, human persons and animals, died when the breath of life in their nostrils was cut off. Death, then, in the scriptures, is the very opposite of life. It means the cessation of conscious being. We've also been talking about the famous word soul in the Bible. We pointed out that both animals and human beings are called souls, living souls, breathing creatures. You will find the animals referred to as souls in Genesis 1, verses 20, 21, 24, and 30. But you may have to consult your concordance to verify this, because many translators concealed this fact from us by using the word soul only for man and not for the animals. The reason for this was probably their own idea that only man should be connected with the word soul, but the Bible is quite clear that both animals and people are living souls sharing the same breath of life. The soul of man is really the life of a man in all its complexity. Soul sometimes means also appetite and desire, and it can also include the intellectual capacities of man. But souls in the Bible can be killed, so you can speak about dead souls. Have a look, for example, at Numbers 6, verse 6. Here we read about a dead soul, so souls are definitely not immortal. The word soul can sometimes just be the word for a person, just as today we can speak of a poor soul or a number of souls dying in an accident. In English, at least when I was a boy, people would say, "Bless my soul," meaning not much more than "bless me" or "bless myself." A dead soul in the Bible is simply a deceased person, someone who has departed from life and gone into death. This information you will find invaluable as you study your Bible. I would feel rewarded if you were able to read the Bible with greater understanding because you're reading the words in their Hebrew context with the right meanings. I have tried to emphasize that there is one thing the word soul does not mean in the Bible. It does not mean an immortal part of you. You are definitely not an immortal soul living in a mortal body. Now, in Greek philosophy, especially in the philosophy of Plato, soul could indeed mean an immortal soul, an imperishable part of us, but in the Bible it never means that. In other words, the Bible does not teach that man has an immortal soul built into him, a soul which goes on living consciously after the man dies. As one contemporary writer puts it nicely, the Bible does not teach that at death, and I quote, "John Brown's body lies a mouldering in the grave while his immortal soul goes marching on." That is not the language of the Bible at all. When John Brown dies, according to the Bible, he sinks into unconsciousness and remains in that condition until Resurrection Day comes. And that day has not come yet, but it will when Jesus returns. A contemporary writer helps us to understand that man in the Bible does not have a never-dying soul. He speaks of, and I quote, "our unfortunate preoccupation with the notion of the immortality of the soul." That doctrine is a piece of non-Hebraic philosophical baggage with which we've been stuck ever since the church got out into the wide world of Greek thought. End of quotation. The same author goes on to say that the idea that we live again immediately we die, and I quote again, has given us almost nothing but trouble. End of quotation. This author is right. There is no imperishable part of you that will go on living automatically after you die. Jesus will not reattach immortal souls to new bodies at the resurrection. No, the biblical scheme is that when we die, the whole man dies, and then in the resurrection, the whole man will live again. The writer I was quoting just now goes on to say, Those so-called unbelievers who horrify Christians by saying that when you're dead, you're dead, are actually closer to faith in the gospel than they know. Once we grasp the idea that we are mortal, our only hope is in being brought back from total death, as this same writer puts it vividly, stone cold, body and soul, nothing at all, death. I like the non-theological style of Christian authors like that. They tell it like it is, an expression I seem to have picked up here since we came to live in the United States. The total cessation of life view of death, rather than belief in a difficult-to-understand, shadowy condition of immortality immediately we die, clears the air for a really powerful view of the resurrection. Listen to the words of Jesus as he dealt with death, and notice the no-nonsense vocabulary he uses. After his friends told him of the sickness of Lazarus, Jesus said, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going to waken him out of his sleep." That's in John chapter 11, verse 11. Jesus, you see, knew that death was like sleeping. He had learned that from the Hebrew Bible, what we call the Old Testament. He had read in Daniel 12, verse 2, that the dead are sleeping in the dust of the ground, and that they're going to wake up in the resurrection after the time of final tribulation. So Jesus was thoroughly biblical in his description of death as sleep. So having said that Lazarus was asleep, Jesus then made himself absolutely clear. He said, "Lazarus is dead." You'll find that in John 11, verse 14. Lazarus had been in his tomb for 4 days before Jesus reached him. There was no possible mistake about his condition. In fact, the account says that there was a stench coming from his dead body. After praying, Jesus cried out to the dead corpse, "Lazarus, come out!" And the corpse, now living again, emerged from the tomb, complete with cloths wrapped around his hands, feet, and face. What a staggeringly simple operation! And yet what stupendous power was exerted by God, working through Jesus, to bring that dead man back to life. I'm sure you noticed that Lazarus was not called back from heaven. The account knows nothing of a soul returning to its body. Rather, as many now say is the Bible way of dealing with death and life, the whole Lazarus was restored to life. The breath of life reanimated him, and he lived again. Lazarus himself had not gone anywhere during the 4 days since his death, except to his tomb. He had been entirely unaware of the passage of time, as we all shall be when we die. You have in this marvelous story of a dead man coming back to life again, the promise of the possibility of resurrection for you too, if you are among the faithful followers of Jesus. If God, using Jesus, can raise Lazarus from the dead, he can empower his Son to bring you back to life, the whole of you, but equipped with a new body which will not be subject to death ever again. In that extraordinary episode, we have a demonstration of what it means to die and to return from death. Again, it's essential to notice the language of Jesus about death and resurrection, and to model our own language on his. The dead, Jesus says, are people who have fallen asleep and are now sleeping. Their only hope of rescue from that inert condition is to be woken up from the sleep of death. I must remind you that Jesus and Job shared exactly the same concept of what it means to die and what it means to live again. And so you see, the Old Testament and the New are in complete harmony on this issue of what it means to die. Do you remember the famous declaration of Job? I've been using this text quite often. "Man dies and lies prostrate. Man expires, and where is he? As water evaporates from the sea, and a river becomes parched and dried up, so man lies down and does not rise, until the heavens be no more, he will not awake nor be aroused out of his sleep." You'll find that beautiful foundational passage about death and resurrection in Job 14, verses 10 to 12. Death, in the language of Job and Jesus, was falling asleep, and coming to life again will be awaking from the sleep of death. It would be a tremendous gain to us as Christians if, when we spoke of death, we followed the biblical model. We tend not to. We use expressions like passing on or passing away. It is not often that we hear the language of Jesus that the deceased have fallen asleep. The great advantage of using Jesus' own terminology is that we would look forward to the great event of the future when the faithful dead will rise from the sleep of death. That's exactly what Daniel was looking forward to when he wrote, many of those who are sleeping in the dust of the ground shall arise, some to everlasting life. I commend that precious and instructive verse to you for your examination. You'll find it in Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. That verse tells us what the dead are doing, sleeping, and where they're doing it, in the ground. And I must warn you against trying to make that verse say that only bodies are sleeping while immortal souls are alive. That is positively not what it says. We should not add our own traditions to the words of the Bible in Daniel 12, verse 2. It may be that some of this material is new to you. If so, do not hesitate to contact us at the telephone number given at the end of this broadcast. We have some free literature we would like to send you for your personal study. Meanwhile, join us again tomorrow at the same time as we continue to cast our searchlight on the Bible in pursuit of the great questions of life and death. Until then, may God bless you in your search for truth.